All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining us for the March 17th Tehama Groundwater Demand Management Working Group meeting. I'm Stephanie Horry with the Consensus Building Institute, facilitating today's meeting. Actually, before I jump into everything, let's again just do our round robin of introductions, and then we have Joe online. So this will be a great opportunity for Joe to get a sense for who's in the room. So start, Justin.
Justin Jensen, Deputy Director of Public Works, Tehama County Flood Control and Water Conservation District.
Brendan Flynn, grower, water user.
Liz Mary, Groundwater Commissioner.
Adam Clark, grower, groundwater commissioner.
Steve Grunewald, grower, member of the CSAB.
Ian Turnbull from the Capay area, member of the CSAB. And groundwater user.
Todd Amon, Groundwater Commission.
Michael Ward, Groundwater Commission.
Bill Borer, grower.
Thanks. And then Joe online, if you just quickly, we'll go into a more deeper in-depth introduction for you later, but just quickly for folks to online and for folks in the room.
Yeah, sure. I'm Joe Hughes. I'm an attorney in Bakersfield with the Klein Dean Attali Goldner law firm. And you'll hear more about my background in a little bit.
Thanks, Joe. A couple of announcements for folks. One, previous working group member Ben Meary indicated that he had his workload was increasing so much that he decided that it was best for him to step back. So Ben Meary is no longer on the working group. That said, we have Liz Mary and Adam Engelhart from the commission who joined back in. The commission decided that in January, but this would be the first meeting where you are participating with this group. So welcome. So let's get underway. Standard participation procedures folks have seen before. A couple things I want to point out is that this is not a consensus-seeking group. So we don't have to agree on anything. That said, what we really want to hear, particularly since we now have Joe as a consultant helping us out, that for folks to be able to articulate their viewpoints and give their rationale, all the more that we're able to hear that in this meeting, it'll help us be able to capture the range of perspectives, even if we don't always agree on everything. And then since Joe is participating remotely, I'm gonna really, really emphasize and double down on that last one about only one person speaking at a time, so that way folks can be able to hear and follow the conversation. So please refrain from side conversations, especially because that mic is very good at picking up everything. Yes, I'm sure as Joe could attest to. Okay, quick meeting recap since the last time we met was back in early January, so quite a bit of time has passed. So back in January 7th, that was the first time that this group met after the board agreed and said that deferral for the demand management program proposal to April. And so this group have regrouped and identified what are we going to talk about. We honed in on reviewing and discussing the alternative proposal. And then in the alternative proposal, there's the framework portion, and then there's the Appendix A portion that Adam had kindly walked us through. And we identified six priority topics from that Appendix A that this group would like to discuss. And then between in January and February, that's when we elicited folks could submit written comments on that alternative proposal. So that way we can consolidate it and hand it off to Joe Hughes, who we folks agreed to bring on as a consultant, and we got the official contract signed yesterday. So we are all good to go. So for today, we have primarily three goals today. First one is that we want to introduce Joe to the group, allow him to do his introductions, have If you want to ask questions of him, so that way we're all on the same page of what's the scope and role and kind of expectation deliverables for Joe's support through this. Then take some time to we have the straw proposal and we have the alternative proposal. And I'll just want to call out though that fully acknowledge that concerns have been raised about the process for both the straw proposal and the alternative proposal. So I just wanted to voice that the concerns raised, that's very legitimate. And so actually what I'll do after this is when I turn it over to Joe to give his to give some context in reference to the alternative proposal, since Joe was involved with that drafting that document process. But want to just acknowledge that folks have raised those concerns, and so want to pause and kind of take that time with talking with Joe and looking at the proposals to kind of think through what's next and how do we go forward in a way that folks feel that they're being heard. Along those lines, part of what we'll do for that one is actually do a I have a handout that the comments that on the alternative proposal. It's going to be a launching point, not meant to be comprehensive, but what I would like to do is do a round robin at that point where each individual quickly says one thing that they want to retain from either the straw or the alternative proposal, and one thing that they would want to that they feel like absolutely needs to change before they would feel comfortable with it moving forward. So again, not meant to be definitive or anything like that, but it's meant to give an opportunity for every single person to have space to voice their perspectives and for Joe to hear those. And then after the round robin, we'll do open discussion and so on. Then, so those are kind of like the two big ones. And then the next one is that we have March and April, so we're figuring out and reaffirming the work plan and timeline. And then time permitting, we also want to talk about some of the substantive pieces. And so Justin, give us an update on voluntary incentive-based actions that are underway and kind of get your feedback on what's next with those. So I have to try and publish. Any questions? Or we just dive right in. Okay, so as I had mentioned, going to really let Joe kind of introduce himself and give some context for his not only his background but also the context in his role since he was involved with drafting up the alternative proposal, and then speaking to how he views working with this group going forward. And so we'll get into the scope of his work. So turning it over to you, Joe, and it's bring it out of the corner.
All right. Thank you, Stephanie. So as you've see there on the screen, as Stephanie introduced me, I'm Joe Hughes. I've been a water lawyer in California for a little over 30 years now. I've been kind of joking with people lately that I'm not really sure how I got so many miles on my odometer, but I woke up one day and I can safely say I've been a water lawyer for 30 years. I've represented clients, but in the private sector, but also in the public sector from Southern California up through the Central Valley, where I live, as I said, in Bakersfield, all the way up through the Central Valley to Northern California and then down along the coast. Represented groundwater sustainability agencies, which I will talk about in a minute, with respect to Sigma, obviously. But I've also worked on the State Water Project, where I've worked, represented water districts with state water contracts, state water project contracts, as well as on the federal side of the world, the Central Valley Project, down here in Kern County. I just literally flew into the office, almost, I should say ran into the office from Fresno, where I had a meeting with the Kings River Water Association. They're the water master on the Kings River. I've been general counsel there for the last 10 years. They're one of the largest water rights holders in the state. So I've done surface, I've done groundwater, I've kind of done just about everything you can do in my 30 years as a water lawyer. With respect to groundwater in particular, I've been involved in three different groundwater adjudications going back to Antelope Valley. Most recently, I was involved in the Las Poses adjudication down in the Ventura area, where I represented the large mutual water company there. And then I also got, I'm still involved in, as we're getting going, the Oxnard Pleasant Valley adjudication. That's really helpful. And I'm going to be touching on that probably a lot because the groundwater adjudication is really, that's how we used to do things before SGMA came along. SGMA really is, I kind of think of it as a statutory adjudication. The physical solution, that is the judgment that you end up with in a groundwater adjudication, really is a GSP. Really is a GSP. I'm also involved in the Cuyama Basin groundwater adjudication. However, there I represent the GSA, and I've represented the Groundwater Sustainability Agency over in Cuyama since its inception. So it's, gosh, it's been about 8, 9 years, something like that now. Cuyama is an interesting place, which I'm going to touch on in a little bit. So there I'm actually charged with taking our GSP and making sure that it is preserved and doesn't get paved over by the physical solution that was filed by in the adjudication that was filed by the two large landowners over there. And so there's a tension between the GSA and some of the parties in the adjudication who don't really like the GSP that we came up with. So they filed an adjudication. And so part of my job over there is to defend the GSP, the authority of the GSA, because as you all know, SGMA ain't going away. And so we don't want to, we want to preserve what we've been working on for the last, many, many years. So that's over in Cuyama. In the valley, I've represented a number of GSAs locally in the Kern sub-basin. In implementing SGMA, Kern was, significant sub-basin in the state. We avoided the probationary status. We had a probationary hearing last fall, and we successfully avoided being sent off into probation by the State Water Resources Control Board. We've had multiple plans, multiple goes at that, goes at it. Attempts to satisfy the DWR, but then the State Water Resources Control Board. For me personally, it was kind of, it was something of an accomplishment because of the, tw I think we've got, we ended up with 22 GSAs, by the, at the end of the day, it fractured significantly. We ended up with 22 GSAs. And I was the attorney lead in the sub basin, as I, and I kind of jokingly say that put me in charge of between 15 and 20 of my closest attorney friends throughout the state who represented the other GSAs, bringing to closure and doing a lot of negotiation, and hand-wringing on my part and on and some and arm twisting as well to bring the sub basin together. And we successfully, as I said before, successfully avoided being sent off to probation, and the state board approved our GSP, and now we're back with under the jurisdiction of DWR. For me, career-wise, that was one of my greatest accomplishments because it was a big group to take the take to lead through that, and from an attorney standpoint, and we successfully did it. So, anyway, so. With groundwater and SGMA, I've, as I said, I've represented a number of GSAs and represented parties in groundwater adjudications and represented a GSA in a groundwater adjudication. Where all that takes me, so that's kind of my background and my experience with respect to water and groundwater regulation in particular. Where all that takes me ultimately, and why I'm pretty excited about working with your working group, is that to be successful in any of those contexts, you really have to bring together a bunch of different ideas. And Stephanie, I think she outlined, so the rules of the road in getting there. It's challenging, but I always tell people, whether it's with a water district or when we're working in adjudication trying to settle everything, The best ideas come from people coming together and the debate and questioning. And I've seen that. Again, I've been doing this a long time, particularly in the litigation context. You really do get the best ideas at the end of the day by putting it out on the table and no name calling, but challenging and questioning, and debating and even sometimes some arguing over things. And I've seen it again and again. You get to where you need to go through that process, and it's not always fun. But I truly believe in the process and making sure that everyone is heard. And that's where the best ideas, come out, and you get to the best result. So, that's my experience. That's what I've learned from that experience, and that's what I hope to bring to the working group here. I was initially approached, oh gosh, kind of a little bit of a blur now, late last year by a couple landowners to look at the demand management program and just get my thoughts, because again, I've given you my background, and so certainly in a groundwater adjudication, demand management is allocations. That's what it is, and I've been through that process, and I've been through it with some of the GSAs that I've represented, so they wanted to pick my brain. So I helped them put together what you see as the, you're referring to as the alternative proposal. And it really is just that. We put it together in a fairly short period of time just to say, hey, here's some other ideas. In my mind, it was never intended to be the idea. Like here's the program. You need to adopt it, as is. It was really a, here's ideas. Here's some thoughts. Here's some things that I've seen and others have seen. So let's put it down on paper so that folks have something to react to. It was important to me professionally and also personally not to just nitpick, or criticize the work of others. I truly think that, yeah, you should give feedback and it can be critical feedback, but you also have to move the ball forward and say, well, instead of that, how about this? Don't just be critical. Be constructive about it and say, well, here's something else that could work. And I want your critical feedback to that. So to Stephanie's point about my role and my participation in the alternative proposal, it was put something forward, so that folks can react to it, and can question it. And as I said before, what I've learned over the years, particularly in the groundwater adjudication context, where you literally do have, 20 or 30 lawyers sometimes locked in a room with a mediator, and you're just trying to hammer through, a resolution that's going to work for everybody. Get it all out on the table, get everybody to chew on it, and, make it work for everybody. So, that was my role in the alternative proposal, and I see my role going forward, and the agreement that I signed up with is really not in the wearing a lawyer's hat representing anybody in the room. It really is as a legal consultant, we'll call it that, where I can bring some of my experience to the table. And if you've got questions about, other parts of the state, Joe, what are they doing? We don't have, when do we have to reinvent the wheel and when do we not have to reinvent the wheel? What are other people doing? What do you think is going to work? Is this implementable? If that's a word. What have your GSAs done? Where have they tripped up in trying to implement their GSPs, particularly with respect to allocations and demand management? That's what I see that I'm here for. And when you want something written up, absolutely, I can write something up. And I'm not, again, I'm not representing anybody in the room. It's just the scrivener. Here you go. Here's something. And then that gives, as I said before, like with the alternative plan, gives you something to react to. So something on paper as opposed to, just questioning and being critical, which is fine. But like I said, to move the ball forward at some point, you got to put pen to paper. And so, I see that as being my role as well to come up with, the next alternative, for the group here. Write this up. You like this. And as Stephanie laid out, what does everybody like about this plan? What don't they like about that plan? And then, put that together. And I see part of my role as being the guy who can write that up for you. And if I miss the target, believe me, I've got thick skin. Just tell me, no, you missed it, Joe. That's not what we were talking about. We want something different. That's what I'm here for, so that none of you have to do that. And I can take the criticism for not hitting the mark if it didn't get written up correctly. So That was a lot to take in, but that was my background and how I got here and how I think I can be helpful to the cause, along with any other ideas anybody else has. So, Stephanie, I'll turn it back to you. If there's anything I missed, please tell me and I'll fill in the blanks.
I think that's really helpful. Thank you so much, Joe. And like folks have heard, you'll have a chance to review Joe's initial scope and have two of the main feedback that we got fell into two themes. One of them was more on the process, wanting to make sure that that Joe has a good understanding of the issues and perspectives of the full demand management working group, so the diversity of those perspectives and how that and be able to clearly see how Joe is putting that and is being incorporated into whichever initial drafts. Again, though, final kind of whatever gets taken to the board, I guess, like is on Justin. But we're trying to create a process where you're all able to have an opportunity to share your perspectives and that the consultants and staff are pulling it together. And then the other one was specifically there's an item that related to the fees and funding. So the original scope was written as develop the program's fees and funding structure. And so people had a question mark on that because we're the way that our funding structure is going to be is a GSA-wide, Sigma implementation-wide fee structure. And so the scope language adjusted it that Joe can help out with developing the program, the demand management program's costs. So pulling it in more on that one and acknowledging that that it folds into the GSA fee structure. I think those were the main differences. Justin, anything that you want to add?
Oh, I don't think so. That's pretty much it.
I just maybe offer comment to piggyback on what Joe was in his introduction. And people can correct me if I'm wrong, but this is my memory or maybe my personal opinion about why Joe or someone like Joe in the room. And to put it probably most simply is we don't know what we don't know. And we certainly aren't experts in water law or law in general. And we have a firm understanding, or at least most of us do, that this process has been done before. We're not the first, and we might be one of the last to create this demand management program, or might be called something different in different GSAs. We might be one of the last to implement something like this. Hopefully we never have to implement it if it just keeps raining. But we have to have it on the shelf. And I think what a few of us came to the conclusion when we got to the last the plan, which I don't know if that was the original plan, but we'll call that the original plan.
Tropical. Yeah, this whatever name you want.
Well, not the new one, but the alternative is the alternative. The old one was the one that was kind of charging forward with. There's some real concerns about that did not necessarily align with what other GSAs were doing, for one, and two, that it could be putting the county in real legal jeopardy, and then therefore, if it became unusable, it would be putting us in a position where the state would come in and take over anyway, right? So we ultimately want to retain as much local control as possible, and in order to do that, we need to put forward a good work product that is usable and therefore acceptable and acceptable to DWR and ultimately, I guess, the county supervisors. But there are those of us that recognize that there are certainly people who've done this before and people who are better suited to guide us through the process than just ourselves alone in a room. And not taking away from Justin or the county or all the hard work that was put in to the original proposal, that there's not saying that's all junk and we throw it out the window. There was just some serious concerns with certain components of it,
And that's why we came up with the alternative proposal with some input from Joe, I believe. I wasn't on the calls or in the room, but poked out a little bit downstream. So anyway, that's just kind of offering a little more set in the table. And if anybody has any now, but I think it's helpful to kind of remember why we got to where we are, which is adding Joe to the team. And we appreciate that Joe is able and willing to be on the team.
Thanks, Brendan. And I think, you're creating some very nice segue into the next discussion where we're trying to compare and figure out what's the best that we want to keep from either the initial straw proposal and the alternative proposal and how we go there, and looking to Joe to help us navigate through that. Want to pause, though, if folks had any questions of Joe in terms of the scope of work and his role. Joe, did we articulate the specific deliverables in your scope?
We did. Flipped over to that screen here, so I'll just read them to you. Deliverables: a revised internally consistent demand management program document, board ready draft. And again, that's the, for successful here, that, you know, that's the objective, to come up with a completed item. And then a short program mechanics memo, addressing key operating rules, allocation, measurement, reporting, compliance, and enforcement as appropriate to the draft. So that's the memo that goes along with it. And then board ready support materials, brief staff memo, and draft action language. So to me, again, as a guy who has been representing public agencies and boards of directors, you know, my entire career, last time I added up, probably about 20 to 25 of them over my career, that's the board packet, right? That's your item where, you know, here's the document, here's my memo, how this thing is going to get implemented, and then here's my staff memo, here's how it all comes together. So for me, that's like preparing for any board meeting 6 months out. Here's the, you know, that is the deliverable, as you refer to it. I think of it as, you know, that's my job, and that's the successful completion of my job. So those are the deliverables as I see them in the scope, Stephanie.
Perfect. No, thanks for that, Joe. Let's see what. Oh, see if any folks had questions of Joe about his role in the scope.
I think the only question slash comment I would have is, I understand that we have a finite amount of Joe's time, so being cognizant of that limited resource, and Joe, I would look to you to help us stay out of the proverbial weeds, if you will. You know, if we're headed down a path that, in your opinion or your experience, is just something we don't need to solve today, or not a good direction to go. I think it will be very helpful to have someone keep us on track a bit, while also being efficient with your time.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate that. And yeah, that's a really good idea, and I can do that.
Joe, this is Steve Grunwald. I had a question with respect to the revised contract. I saw the proposed contract the first time, and it was a flat rate for those deliverables. Have you worked something else out? And if so, should we see a copy of it to know where you're at with us? Is it time or materials now, or what is it? And is there a cap on time or not?
Well, okay. So what I signed yesterday, and Stephanie, I don't know if that's, I mean, it's not a secret, but whatever I signed is the only agreement that's out there. It's a not to exceed. So it's time and materials with a not to exceed. So okay. When I get to that, and having done these things before, you know, I'm not going to run it up, you know, to the boundary there and say, oh, hey, wait a minute, we got a problem. When I have come into similar, projects, I also understand, you know, managing that budget, it's always important, but it's really important here. So you'll hear from me well before I get within, you know, shouting distance of that cap. I'll say, I got to kind of see where this is going. We're good, but, you know, we may need to tailor, you know, the rest of my involvement, you know, so we can land this plane at the appropriate place. So it'll be interactive, and I'll be letting you know where we are. It won't be a secret.
Thank you.
And
one little bit to that, Steve, just so I think it's helpful in why it's like that. When you do grant-based work, they want to see how many hours everybody worked and the cost of those hours when you seek that reimbursement. So having a contract that's time and materials is almost like a requirement to do this for consultant-type work. It can be difficult to get reimbursed for certain flat rate stuff. If it was just the county doing it, the flat rate would be in our best interest, right? But ultimately, I don't think that we can make that happen anyway.
Yeah, and to Justin's point, my initial thought was just what I called just flat fee it. That way we don't have to worry about it. We can just get to work. Particularly for projects like this, you don't want to overstep. I really believe in what you all are doing. And so, of all the things that I've worked on in my career, this is not a project that I jump into thinking, oh, hey, I'm going to get rich and retire on this. Really is, I believe what you all are trying to do. And if I can help out in any way, that's what I want to do with my time. And so that's why I kind of came into it. I'll just flat fee it and nobody's going to worry about it. And then Justin explained what he did, which is, yeah, we can't do it that way. So that's why we did it, made the other arrangement.
So, Joe, this is Ian Turner. Who are you working for? LSCE?
Yes. Yeah, I'm a subcontractor to them.
Okay. Thank you.
So the kind of process that we're thinking that the two main ways, again, as Adam mentioned, to try and be most cost-effective with Joe's time, that we'll have these meetings where you can directly share your feedback and input to Joe and be able to bounce ideas. In between meetings, we're recommending that it's kind of like the previous consultants. You send us your comments and things, and we'd be able to consolidate it and kind of talk it through with Joe and give him some direction. And so the primary folks that we're envisioning is going to be LSE in terms of the contract, and if there are particular technical types of questions, district staff, and then me just supporting and helping the group chug along. So that's how we're kind of envisioning that process. So very similar to how it was with David's engineering and ERA.
Joe, my name is Michael Ward. And the only, one of the main concerns I have is I do want to get into the weeds a little bit with respect to our general approach to demand management. And mainly it's the polygon approach. And I'd like to know, one of the issues is the legal defensibility of this approach. And this is kind of the crux of the demand management program or effort is a polygon-based basis. And either I'd like to know, is this legally defensible what we proposed here, or how do we make it legally defensible?
It's legally defensible, that's a loaded question because it's not so much the polygon approach that would get you into trouble. Is that going to interfere with someone's groundwater rights where they say that's not fair how you are implementing a demand management, how you've written up the demand management program? So I would say the use of the polygons in and of itself, that's one way of doing it. And I've seen folks do it. That won't be the issue. The issue will be what does that drive? If it drives some unfairness where some are being allowed to continue to pump, without restriction or very little restriction while neighbors are being restricted because of how you've implemented the polygons, that's going to be the problem. In Kuyama, we developed a central management area because that was the hot spot in terms of groundwater depletion and lowering groundwater level. So that was the hot spot because there was a intense farming happening there. So we just, think of it as one big polygon, but we created a central management area. Yeah, it's been controversial, but ultimately folks have gone with it because it was needed. So whether it's smaller polygons or a central management area, Sigma allows you to create management areas and regulate the extraction of water. How you go about doing that, different strokes for different folks, depending on, what your particular sub-basin requires. So long way of saying, yeah, in and of itself, it's not prohibited. It's just a matter of, does it fit the bill for what we need to do here?
This is Ian again. I think what you've just said, is the problem that many have with the polygons. They're, because of the number of monitoring wells and their location, some of them are clearly not reflective, are clearly wrong. And I think that it's not polygons per se that some, including myself, are objecting to. It is that the situation that you just described is what will end up happening, because they're either too large, or in certain cases, or they're encompassing same polygon but wildly different groundwater conditions on one end of it versus the other. So that's kind of, I think, not trying to speak for anybody else, but I, you know, I think that is a lot of the problem that many see. Would like to see something tied to conditions. Originally, I supported the polygon approach, but after we got into it, I think that there's going to be some problems with it unless we have a significant increase in the number of monitoring points.
Got it. Thank you for that. Appreciate the explanation.
Yeah. Well, I think building on Ian's old point, really.
Can I put a pin on this? Because these are actually the points I do want to actually bring up. So looping back to it, is that okay, Adam?
Well, just the point I was going to raise, your second point on section F here in the summary. To me, the real question is, do the boundaries need to be set by April? Or is it something we commit to defining later on?
Yeah.
That's really the question, I think, for Joe. Does I agree with all the comments made so far? There's a lot of, this is one of the bigger issues, right? And so my question really is, your point, does it need to be solved by now?
Yeah, I think neither of the programs define them.
All right, yeah. But now, you can't get in this.
Ultimately, I think everybody's sort of on that same page. That
yeah.
The definition can't be done quite yet. Yeah, we don't have the tools to do that.
I'm going
to
put a pin in this. It's great. You now helped me summarize Row F. I don't have to do it again. But I just wanted to kind of close the loop on if folks had any final questions on Joe's scope and role before we start kind of looking again at the proposals. Otherwise, I think Joe is primarily going to be, for this next agenda item, Joe is going to be in this kind of listening mode to hear the various perspectives, questions, and concerns. We'll open it up then for just open Q&A after we do this round robin, and Joe can ask clarifying questions if he has. So, okay. Looking at the proposals, again, what I would like to do after we do some quick orientation on and kind of re-jog our memories about the proposals, that we would want to do a round robin where folks can just quickly articulate, you know, one thing that they want to keep and one thing they want to change, just as a starting point. So as a reminder for the straw proposals, for the two proposals, the straw proposal had kind of that kind of dual thing where, you know, certainly incentives first, and then there were kind of like the management action one, which was kind of related to fee triggers, and management action two was related to curtailment. The measurable objective was kind of the set for triggers. As we mentioned, the fees and polygons as the approach for identifying the management zone boundaries and kind of combining these to come up with combined safe yield areas. And that the fifth assessment would occur in 2032. So those are just some of the key things that was in the straw proposal. In the alternative proposal, it split it up into a voluntary phase and a mandatory phase. Again, the alternative proposal was kind of at a higher level, so it was more at the framework level of detail. It named specifically having a communication engagement plan as a precondition before going into phase one. It named that instead of having the Bayesian polygon approach, suggested that using hydrologic conditions as a way of identifying the boundaries for the management zones. Framework process document it said the details would be figured out after you go through the engagement And that the similarly, the as you kind of have a better sense of what's going on, then you can have a clear idea of what that timeline for assessment would be. So, I mean, one of the things, like the kind of the core buckets of viewpoints were pretty similar. For instance, like folks like the idea, like management zones make sense of managing to where, you know, like not having a complete umbrella approach to management, but try to come up with ways with where you can you manage to the problem where the problem exists. So the concept folks supported, and I think still supports, it's just the how. And then there's the question of like, when do we have to decide on the how? And so again, the next step with this round robin is to start delving into like, let's draw out the best of both. Okay. So folks in the room received a handout that I'm going to go over in a minute. Again, this handout summarizes the comments that were received on the alternative proposal. And so we received multiple rounds of comments from Steve, Ian, Michael, and Liz. And so that was an 88-page document that you all received. So all the more reason why I created a one-pager. As you can imagine, since it represents four members' perspectives, it's not meant to represent the full working group's perspectives. It's meant to be a launching point, and it's not comprehensive. I've tried to identify what were kind of the frequent comments, and then I also tried to find ones that were slightly new and different compared to what had been discussed in the straw proposal, just to help make sure that we're seeing some of the differences. So let's see if I can pull the document up. All right. A couple things to orient. So the first rows A through E, these rows, program scope, engagement, the LSE's technical memo, Sigma fees, and funding provision section, those relate to folks. Remember that first part of the alternative proposal was that framework portion. So not Appendix A, but that first part. So that's those sections. Some of the things that I'll note about these was from these working group comments, folks want to say, let's bring in the original was just for Los Molinos, Red Bluff, and Antelope. Folks are saying include Corning. So might as well have this be a Tehama County wide for all the basins within Tehama County. The next one, engagement. Folks are saying that this was kind of a crucial one for folks, that communication engagement should not be a condition and contingent before phase one can start. That phase one and communication and engagement can occur simultaneously. I think before one of the many materials that was sent out to you, we had this summary slide of past communication and engagement and kind of thoughts on. So, you know, communication and engagement, outreach and engagement, it has been happening and will continue to happen. So I think that's actually quite nicely aligned with what the working group was suggesting. I'm gonna jump again. Like the things related to the fees and funding, folks called out that hey, that's that process and those details are being addressed as part of a Sigma implementation fee structure. So to whatever extent we talk about it in terms of demand management related costs, fine. But fee funding should be kind of separate. Next sets of comments, rows F through L. These ones will mimic very similar to the Appendix A headers. So plan area management zone, sustainable yield approach, the measurable measurable objectives and minimum thresholds, the trigger mechanisms, allocations and a credit system, penalty fee structure and curtailment. So a lot of these things want to note that not only were several of these the priority topics that this group identified last January that they want to talk about in further detail going forward, but these are also very similar to the issues and concerns that folks raised related to the straw proposal. So even though these comments were on the alternative proposal, these are several, there's a lot of overlap with some of the questions and concerns on straw proposal. Within these, I just want to point out some things that are kind of new and different. As Adam mentioned, in Row F, plan area management zone delineation, one of the questions is like, do we need, do the boundaries need to be set before April? So question mark there. Jumping down to I, trigger mechanism, measurable objectives and minimum thresholds. One of the suggestions I felt that I thought was new, or maybe I'm wrong, but that minimum thresholds exceedance could be a trigger for mandatory restrictions, measurable objective could be the trigger for incentive measures. And so there was that suggestion there. J, pumping allocation credit system. I think one thing that I got from the comments was folks want the straw proposal described the credit system as a may include. A commitment to exploring what that could be, and they folks liked kind of that a bit of that flexibility rather than a full on whole board commitment to including a trading system. So there was kind of that these folks wanted to better understand before they felt comfortable with supporting it. Row K, penalty fee. I think, you know, people, this volumetric excess facing fees on usage makes sense. I think one of the, another specific, I think it's come up during the straw proposal that, sure, you can have this penalty fee structure, but you need to have some sort of backstop. So it's not like, okay, if you have the money to pay for it, that you can just pump as much as you want. So we're having a backstop. One of the new thing was the different perspectives on revenue priority. So I just wanted to note that was a new one that was named a, you know, whatever revenue you generate from these penalty fees, there are different perspectives of where would you allocate those funds. So I don't think that's something that needs to be, or whether or not that's something that needs to be hashed out fully before April, but wanted to name that is a point of discussion for this group. And last, curtailment, row L, just want to acknowledge that, in the comments, people indicated that they felt 2032 was too late to do any sort of assessment, but we did talk about this back in that January meeting. And so we said, that, we can start earlier than that. And if we're seeing, such that, if we're seeing like undesirable results, a constant decline of groundwater levels towards those minimum thresholds, maybe that's the start to trigger phase two. So opening up that option.
How are we using the word assessment then?
We're talking about condition assessments, which we do annually.
Not a fee assessment.
Not a fee assessment. Condition assessments. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Thank you. And the final two rows, appendix A, scope level of detail, specificity. I think this is aligned. These are more kind of like overarching general themes. And I think this group did talk about it. There's this tension between and like this trade-off and trying to find a balance between folks wanting to have something, a document that is enforceable, has, you know, pretty much the teeth to it. At the same time, folks are cautioning against over committing to the details and concerns of where do we start to have this liability risk. So very much looking to Joe to help us navigate and try to find a balance between those two. So I want to pause, let folks kind of absorb a bit, and folks have any kind of clarifying questions. This is meant to, you don't have to choose from this in your, you know, keep or change, but this was supposed to, was intended to help jog folks' memories and try to summarize an 88-page document.
Sure.
to start?
Actually, especially since you have to leave. Yes. Please start.
Give my two cents in.
Yes.
No, I'll just be quick and simple. I think we've already touched on it. The concept that was causing me the most angst with version one was the polygon approach, and the speed at which we were moving to use the polygon approach. And when we individually or as a group pushed back and said, this doesn't feel like the best approach, the responses were, this is the only approach and this is the one we're going to go with because it's what we have now and we have to do something. So I think we pushed back on that and got to the point where the document is going to get voted on, and that's how you get to the alternative proposal, one of the reasons. So a new approach to management zones, is that the correct terminology? A different approach to management zones other than a polygon, piece of polygon. I can understand it. I can get it. I just don't think it's operated well in the context of how it's laying out in Zane account. For example, wells that are very near the river getting treated in the same polygon as wells on the other side of I-5, as an example. I think that's a thing. I remember correctly.
Really is that grouping them together in similar conditions where it creates this bigger area.
Yeah, good.
So then it's looking like this big sort of
all, hands. Yeah, all of the above. Yeah, the parts that came along with the polygon approach were also awesome. And then from the new approach, there's a couple. I think that one being that this credit transferability needs to be tightened up. For example, I don't think we would want folks that have the capability of taking fallowed or unused or lightly used ag land and saying that those acres, those units have some sort of pumping allocation, but it's not being used, and I'm going to acquire that, and I'm going to take that as a credit that it's not being used, and I'm going to apply it over this other area because I need those credits. I don't know if that's how it's set up. I'm not clear, but I think that needs some attention because that is not in the spirit of managing the resource. Right, it's just moving the chairs on Titanic, maybe. And then for similar reasons, you know, if you have deep pockets and you can pay to overpump, that should be that is also not the spirit of the reduction or the protection of the resource, where I'm going to protect my assets, and I have extra cash, so I'm going to pay to pump. So I think that deserves some additional scrutiny. I think both of those are in the newer draft, they're not in the older draft. My memory is right. A lot of time in between reading. So.
All right, perfect. Thanks.
You got my two.
All right. Thanks, Brendan. Yeah, polygon approach and grouping things by similar features, and then the credit system. So much. Let's keep moving. Liz, one thing that you want to make sure is retained either from proposals, and one thing that you would like to see change.
I really like the emphasis on community outreach. I think it's a really difficult thing to do, and it's hard to get people interested until it shows up as a fee on their property tax bill, as we saw with the 29-cent well registration fee. I don't know how we go about doing that except to just keep talking about it, but I really like the emphasis that has been put on that, especially in the alternative proposal. There's a bunch of stuff I don't like. I like everything that Brendan said. I agree with him on the credit transfers. And it is weird to be depending on these polygons when they were made up around RMS wells that were drilled arbitrarily with no, because we didn't know that we were going to be having these problems now. So more wells will help that, and will help define those polygons. So, I mean, making the management zones is fantastic. But again, you're always going to have people who are being either unjustly allocated, Also, I wanted to make a point that we keep throwing the word April around. I have heard through little birdie supervisors that we will absolutely be given more time. And at the groundwater commission level, we have discussed getting one thing out of this group and bringing it to commission and getting it before the board, instead of having a whole demand management thing that everyone has to absorb all these different points at the same time, being able to just focus on one thing and get their input and input from the board of directors and moving forward like that, and then putting all of this together, like not doing the whole big thing at once.
Sometimes if you can get physical concurrence of something and move to the next thing, it helps with that sort of keeping the ball getting kicked down the road, right? As opposed to trying to argue it all at once in a political environment. I can't disagree with that.
And I don't know how we go about figuring out which fight we want to take first, but I think we will find that when we figure, if we can figure that out, we will find as we figure this one thing out, that will help with the next conversation as well. I'm hopeful of a pattern anyway. Is that enough?
Yeah, I think that's all. The new ones I captured was that calling out specifically the communication engagement is an important one. And then this general question of what needs to be brought to the board in April that will convince the board to consider.
Yeah, and we can get like one good thing to bring them. Mm-hmm. That'll be like, take some time.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, perfect. Adam.
I think my main concern and question remains not yet fully understanding the homework assignment. And what I mean by that is, what level of specificity do we need to have in the plan that's submitted to DWR in 2026? So, case in point, there's been a lot of discussion around management zones and polygons, and I share all of those concerns. My real question is, do we need to solve the problem in 2026, or do we simply need to agree upon the methodology we will use to solve the problem in the future? Because those are two very different points. You know, so what I'm hearing here is some unease about the polygon method in favor of management zones that are based on hydrographic or the conditions of the ground, whatever the word is. Seems like common sense to me. So if we can agree on that as a method and give ourselves time and data to actually find those zones, that makes sense to do that. But I don't know that we can answer that question right now. So I think understanding what we actually have to do with my when is probably the most important thing we have to talk about. I think the second point is, I just got back from a week-long farm financial health conference. You know, farms are not in good shape around the country right now. And one thing I think is clear is, if there's clarity, the ability to pump on a piece of land is an asset tied to that land. And the more that our plan is clear on what that asset is and how it was calculated, I think it's going to behoove us and our land values to do that, right? So what I mean by that is, a lot of the current plans are very ambiguous, where is it the MO, is it the MT, you know, pumping levels could go up and down here and there. Where if we develop a plan where the management zones seem sensible and the irrigated lands in a zone are given a credit of 2.5 and 3 acre feet, people can plan on that and they can count on that asset to a certain degree, and I think that's going to support the valuation of the land. The issue we have now is the plan is so ambiguous. If you go to get an appraisal right now, when they do the section on water resources, you're not going to like the answer. I guarantee the assessor is not going to like the answer. So I think the more, you know, I know there's a lot of concern about credits and this and that, and I think there need to be some firm bumpers and rails on that, but people need to know in their zone how many quote unquote credits they have so they can plan.
You mean can't, allocations or credits?
I see it as the same thing. So, you know, if it's an asset, it's an asset. Then, you know, we can talk later about how that asset can be moved around. But I see it as that allocation, if you will, to use that terminology, is a tangible asset that's tied to that land. And we and everyone else needs clarity on how that asset was determined and how it's defined and what can be done with it. Or I'm very concerned that property values in this county, while our program remains so vague and ambiguous.
We've done another while. I'm way with you. The sooner you define it, the better it is for the farmer to be able to proceed and plan and move forward.
I put it on a farm piece of ground 2 weeks ago, you know, for bank grass.
Yeah.
Well, they going to have Sigma pumping restrictions? I said, well, and he's like, well, you want me to lend you $5 million? I mean, I don't know. Fair point.
So I've got, reiterating the line to figure out the credit system, and as well as just general question of what level of specificity is needed to satisfy DWR and ensure Sigma compliance. So trying to navigate, again, the specificity and while also giving yourselves flexibility. Great. That's Steve. You're up next.
Hey, Joe. This is Steve Rubin.
Thanks for
question, I guess, or... Joe, have you had a chance to see our comments and edits to the alternative plan? I know we submitted them to each other, and as I understood, you were going to have a chance to review them and perhaps incorporate them into, or at least comment on some of them. Have you had a chance to take a look?
He received them, but I doubt that we, but I'll let Joe speak.
Are you hearing us, Joe?
Oh, Joe, you're muted. So, Joe,
yeah, I just said something brilliant, but I'm not going to repeat it. Yeah, sorry about that. Yes, I think I have seen them. Stephanie gave me what is posted on the website, a laundry list of documents. I've not reviewed them yet. So
I have too many comments to list right now. I'm not even going to try. With respect to what I would like to keep, you know, these are just parts of it. So the contingent timeline with respect to implementing phase one, I would agree with the general comment. I think it was noted that I'd like to see us be able to pursue those voluntary phase one projects while we continue community outreach. I guess I understand the need for making sure that we've engaged with the community before we do restrictive measures, but voluntary measures, a lot of them we're already doing as growers. The credit transfer system, I have serious concerns about in terms of abuse or being able to, as others have mentioned earlier, buy your way into overpumping or transferring from with that, from one side to the other of the sub-basin. The polygons I have concerns about, we've already talked about. I think one of the proposals or floats out there right now is that we start to re-examine these polygons based on watersheds instead of arbitrary or, you know, Thiessen polygons around RMS. We've got four main watersheds on the west side that are of concern: Stony Creek, Tom's Creek, Elder Creek, and Red Bank. Seems to me those could be the basis at least for a large polygon. And then we could further delineate it, but that's something that's out of my scope. It just makes sense to me to look at it on a watershed basis in proximity to the watershed. Perhaps a Thiessen polygons built around the stream bed would be something to look at. I think in terms of what I would love to see included, are trigger points and specific to areas of concern, and evaluation of those trigger points based on trends toward minimum thresholds, instead of waiting to get to the threshold, or instead of waiting for a date like 2032. I think we need to look at them annually, and I think we have this wherewithal to do that. Yeah, I think that's, you know, that's more than my 2 cents so far. So any more would be in the edits and suggestions that I wrote.
No, we got the 4 cents. That was great. So yeah, again, the credit system, polygonology, the new one that you mentioned of whether or not watersheds could be a way of thinking through management boundaries. Communication, outreach, engagement can move forward simultaneously with the voluntary actions, and that wanting more specificity around in areas of concern, what those trigger points are, and that looking through looking at the trend towards hitting minimum thresholds and looking at it on an annual basis. Great. Ian, you're up.
I'm up. Basically, I'm not disagreeing with pretty much what's been said. I think as far as the straw proposal was too complicated. The methodology was too complicated. People didn't understand it. I had to read it multiple times to understand it and actually apply it in certain situations to see what it did. I think that it's critical, if this is going to work, that the average irrigator landowner understands what is a problem. And to me, the problem is approaching properly set MTs. Before we start taking coercive steps, restricting people, et cetera, there needs to be a good reason people understand MTs if they're properly set. And I'll be the first to say, I don't think they're properly set right now in many, many of them, and it all needs to be revisited. I think we should be looking at that somewhat. If you look at the demand management plan down Stanislaus, you know, they look over the past 4 years and you draw a straight line as to the fall measurements, and it looks like it's going to exceed the MT. I think that's something like that is worth considering. I think MOs are great if they're properly set, but we should get to MOs using incentives, not coercive measures. I think that's key. I think the straw proposal, like I said, was too complicated. You know, it's just looking at it, I think we need to keep it simple so people understand it. They understand that, okay, this is bad, and everybody accepts this is bad. It's bad when wells start going dry if the MTs are properly set. Okay, I can see why I need to be restricted. I think that's really important. Some of the water trading, I think we need some flexibility. I think and I've said this, and it's in some of the documents, any of the credits or transfer system, it cannot provide a vehicle for making conditions worse in areas of decline, period. It cannot provide a vehicle for making conditions worse during periods of drought. So the whole, credits over a time span that could be problematic because of that. And it can't encourage ground, and this, I believe Brendan indicated this, that's not actively irrigated to be used for credits elsewhere. So, you know, the way I see it is a properly defined management zone, for lack of a better word, that you can trade within that as long as it actually is irrigated ground that you're taking out of production, but not across disparate areas, even in the same subject. I think that's going to lead to a lot of problems. I think the medium and small guys are going to really be hit hard. But by the same token, you can't have a situation, because this is very common around here, where somebody decides to retire, they lease out their ground, so they are not farming it. Somebody has leased it, and the lessee may have multiple non-contiguous parcels, and he needs to be able to adjust his water use based on his whole farmed area, as long as it's within that management zone.
All right, so got that. The program being simple enough for the average irrigator or landowner to be able to say, like, okay, there is a problem. Again, we talked about looking at the trends, either towards MTs or and using MOs as for more on the incentives piece. Flexibility on wire trading, acknowledging though that you add certain parameters such that you don't inadvertently cause problems. So, have more stringent parameters for areas of concern during times of drought, and that having the ability though to trade in within a management zone, however those are determined. All right, three more. So I'm going to ask, we're getting a little bit tight on time, but I want to still allow folks to be able to articulate their, at the very least, one thing that you want to keep in, one thing that you want to see changed.
Mine comes down to whether we define them as species of polygons or management areas or Fred, Harold, and George, somehow we're going to have to define those. And those are going to be defined by RMS wells, which we need to take the time to actually define those MOs and MTs. Whether we are defining those areas from MOs or MPs, it doesn't matter, but those have to be defined. And my question becomes, if not now, when? When do we stop pushing this damn thing down the road but get something solid? We've talked about these MOs and MPs not being exact on a lot of wells and just kind of thrown on there. It's time to do something about it, because none of these other things really kick in until we have those defined. And this, the idea of not committing to more detail until data justifies it. At what point does data justify it? Oh no, we don't quite have enough for this little corner. We don't do anything. I don't agree with that. It's gotta be something, gotta happen. And just by the same token, as we start our idea of phase one of voluntary actions, we can't wait till some other date down the line to kick in phase two if those conditions warrant it. And that's why we have to define what those conditions are that would warrant them, because we don't need to satisfy DWR at this point. We need to satisfy dropping groundwater levels in Tama County at this point. We put together a cotton ball soft approach that would make DWR perfectly happy, but in the end of the day, if we're not solving the problem of declining groundwater tables, we've done nothing. And that's what we have to approach. And along the same lines, like everyone else has said, it's trading part. Don't go trading water along the river to water in Rancho Tama and say, no, I can pump anything I want because I've got credits over there. Those have to be in the same management areas, polygons, or however you define them.
So, thanks, Todd. So again, the concern about trading across wherever management zones, or just where it just doesn't make sense, and creating problems where they didn't exist before. The ultimate goal of the groundwater levels are declining, that is something that we need to address, regardless of, if DWR is happy, that shouldn't necessarily be the bar that we set as defining success. Concern about, let's not wait for getting perfect data. We need to move forward because groundwater levels are declining. And that if we are waiting, because we need to, we have these new RMP wells, or we need to fix previous MOs and MTs for existing wells, those various things, to be able to define management zones. Okay, got it. But you want to see a game plan and some time commitments and be able to see, like, what's the clear path forward for addressing that so that you can get a sense for, like, when are we going to get to the certain decision of where are the management zones, how are the management zones being defined? And, all right. Micah.
Yeah. It's kind of hard to talk about this because we're talking about issues that appear in these documents, but you're looking for something, you don't like this in the doc or you hate this in the doc. And it's like, well, this is really kind of a complicated thing to talk about. And so I don't want to be limited.
No,
that's the
starting point.
And I just want to say, so I'll just a couple of things. I think some of this stuff we're talking about delineating polygons, we're talking about when you're looking at the MTs, we really need new MOs. And, none of this is going to be solved in this effort. And, so I think it'd be nice if we had, throughout this effort, come up with some tentative scope of work and schedule that gets us through phase one. And this is what we're going to look at. This is what this plan needs. Okay. As far as phase one stuff, one of the comments here, I think, is, and maybe, and I'm not sure if you wrote this, 2032 as a first assessment is too late. I interpreted that as being waiting till phase two to address minimum threshold issues is too late to address minimum threshold issues. The language in our GSP says that we will manage groundwater to avoid undesirable results, which means we should be looking at Corning Subbasin now to avoid an undesirable result, given the number of MTs there. So what does phase one look like? And I think, for me, this, voluntary measures in phase one should, in Corning Subbasin, needs to be a focused area. It needs to be serious, and we need to have a plan for it. Now, that's probably too late of an order for the time we have left, but I think our plan somehow needs to address that. One of the things that's missing, and I think I appreciate it, everyone's said about credits so far. I think credits trading so complicated, and I think the existing programs on the ground have demonstrated that. I think best case, we can look at this down the road in phase one. I think we need to. I think that conversation needs to happen. And we'll just see where that goes. One of the things that's been missing from our conversations with respect to allocations is that we've never talked about ramping. Okay? Ramping up, ramping down, whatever it is, we haven't discussed it. And that's something we should be looking at in phase one. I think we need to. When it comes to how we look at groundwater consumption, we're going to estimate what people are doing, but are you going to estimate that relative to ramping? I don't think you can do it. I think their technology isn't there unless you're going to meter. Okay. So these are, and really what I want to see out of this is I don't want to see anyone receive a fee for operating below the MO. To me, it feels really punitive. And I think if we're lucky, if we get through this and we can stay above our minimum thresholds, then our goal will be to operate between the MO and the MT. That's going to be our window. If we can stay there, this county's doing great. So I don't want to penalize people for playing around this MO number. It's something that doesn't even exist yet. And probably my last thing, and maybe I've already said it, I think the MTs are good for the focus areas. I think the drought situation provided us with a very reasonable idea of what our minimum thresholds need to be in those focus areas. I think that was a good foundation for that. Outside of those focus areas, I'm open to for ideas. That's where I'm at.
Thanks, Michael. So again, because of the drought, you feel pretty good about the MTs, but I think in the focus areas, you saw in your comments though that you had some concerns, that rigor was not particularly applied to setting those MOs during GSP development. You want to avoid anything over punitive for folks if they're operating within the MOs.
We'll figure out what that window is. But yes, if you can operate there,
mm-hmm.
I think we're doing good.
There's a general question about ramping. Use phase one as an opportunity to look at more of the specifics of credit training. And then with assessments and things like that, you're kind of pointing out, I think you're saying that GSP implementation is you're going to trigger. If you're seeing some of these trends, you're going to be addressing your undesirable results anyways as part of GSP implementation.
And it's our language. And we don't wait till an undesirable result according to our GSPs. So.
And then the last one was similar to what Todd was saying, is you want the phase one schedule more specified out and with clear milestones and kind of sequencing.
I think that's what we really need. I mean, we're talking around all these issues. And they're all big, they're all important, and we need to have a plan to address it.
So, last but not least.
There's one good thing about being last.
Mm.
I just agree with everybody. Or I agree with everybody.
top one or two things that you really, really like.
Well,
Chief.
I think my two concerns that we need to address pronto. What are these management areas? How are they going to be defined? What additional information do we need to define them? Because analyzing the polygons, while there's some talk that all the water conditions within the polygon are the same, that isn't the case, at least one of them I know about. So if we go to managers all around, we need to, as I said, figure out how are they to define those and get it done so people know where they are. And along the same line, we need to find a sustainable yield in those management zones, I guess, right? And the sooner we can do that, the more flexibility we growers will have and manage our branches the next 5 years. And I'm completely lost on how sustainable yield is going to be calculated in this management zone. Michael mentioned focus areas. I guess that defined Justin as an area that has the same characteristics.
It's from the plan, and it's these groups of areas that experienced issues during the bottom end in the drought. So they're kind of grouped together because they saw these issues, these significant declines, numbers of dry wells, really low below MT. Those areas kind of are grouped together within our plans as focus areas. And that's what he is referring to, yes. I assume.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's everything but corny. We didn't have focus zones in corny.
No, it has focus areas in the plan. Okay. Yeah.
They're using that terminology.
You're essentially, yeah.
Well, that's my point is that's
another thing. The actual definition within the plan may slightly differ between Corning and Redbluff. I don't remember right off the top of my head. I think they're the same, but I'm not going to quote that they are. But they do have focus areas within it, within that subbasin.
I guess I'd like to ask Joe if he has any suggestions about how to define these management areas.
Before we go to Joe, I just wanted to better understand. Bill, were you saying that you want to revisit the focus areas, or are you trying to better understand, like, what was focus areas, management zones? Like, was there any connection between? Are you trying to better understand that, or are you suggesting something else?
Well, I think what needs to be done is define the management areas. And when you get those defined, then you can calculate sustainable yields for them. And I suppose if the sustainable yield gets too low, then you have a focus area that includes those. I don't know how a focus area works.
Just kind of a general question. Hey, during the drought, we did identify some focus areas. Does that tell us anything that might be useful as we're looking at management areas, management zones, and calculating the application of the sustainable yield?
One other thing. We talked about fee structure in a couple places in our, I guess, both documents we're working with. And I don't think fee structure is a part of this group's.
Correct.
Yeah.
Most people agree with that.
Yeah.
I think that's a maybe only be specific to program. I mean, we might guess.
I'm not opposed to discussing some general terms with respect to the fees, but dollars and cents, no. I think maybe it might be good for us to weigh in and say, here's what we don't want it to be, or here's where we do want it to be. You know, fees based on volume, I think, most people are in agreement with that, I think, Bill.
Well, I kind of had a problem with the trigger mechanism fees when they weren't really designed to shut down water usage.
I'm hearing folks are comfortable with the idea. Let's talk about fees as they relate to demand management in concept, but getting really down into specific calculation dollars and cents is kind of an area that you're not comfortable with and doesn't feel within the scope of this group.
Yeah.
All right, Joe, you heard the round robin.
The second thing, I'm really sorry. I know we're pushing time, but I just want to say something from staff perspective, just two things. One, whatever comes out of this group must be A, manageable by us, right? We are going to be implementing these programs, and we have to be able to do it in a reasonable way, right? We can get really, really complicated, and things can get really, really difficult and totally unmanageable really quick. So whatever that is, whatever we come up with, staff has to be able to take the data in and have an output that's manageable. And then the second part of that, it has to be politically passable, right? I know we talked about this a little bit, but ultimately the politicians are going to vote to implement policy that comes out of this group. There can't be so much resistance from any one given group that they're going to get so much pressure they're not going to vote yes, right? So ultimately we have to keep that in our head of it has to be passable and it has to be implementable as we move forward. Hopefully we can think of those concepts too or keep those in our head as we put this stuff together.
I just had a couple of questions that I've been trying to think about as we have been having a discussion, and I haven't heard it come up for the group, but I wonder if it's worth discussing what we contemplate all these different things. You know, how do we treat someone who doesn't do planting on land that was previously unirrigated? How does that fit into this?
Unirrigated?
Dryland. Or also if someone fallows something, right? So say somebody has 400 acres of almonds and they pull 200 out. And I bring that up because thinking about it that way, I think at least helps me think about process and how it will be implemented, right? So if Steve has 400 acres, he pulls out 200, what happens to that allocation of the 200 acres that just got pulled out, right? Is that still yours? Does that get spread amongst the group? What happened? But similar way, you know, what say Liz has 400 acres in Pascana and decides to crack in 400 acres of pistachios that haven't been irrigated ever. Does she get an allocation? Or, right? I'm not answers here. I'm just saying these are questions that I think would be interesting to incorporate in discussion.
In the straw proposal, there's an automated system to do that, right? Where it says all of your calculations are based on irrigated acres. As they decrease and as they increase, it makes that pool larger or smaller, which creates a total volumetric measurement that gets smaller or larger, right?
Yeah,
because of that. But ultimately, no matter what, you're probably right, that will have to be addressed in any plan.
Yeah, just food for thought. Again, I don't have answers, but I've been thinking about that.
Yeah, I would take a stab at least one side of that. If I pull 200, if you've got irrigation history, that's sustainable irrigation, or at least irrigation for, you know, some time, don't know what that time would be, but, and you pull it, I would think that that's an asset, that water that you're not using anymore is an asset that you can reallocate to your remaining acreage, provided you're in the same special zone. I mean, you know, we can talk about semantics, like on the same APN or contingent parcel or whatever. Those are just arbitrary lines for the most part. But if you reduce acres and have that available credit in the allocation scenario, I think you should be able to do what you want with it. Again, with the caveat that it can make conditions worse.
Yep. I think that's a good way to think.
And I'm good with that. The issue of converting dry land to irrigated ground in this scenario, in the state that we're in right now, I'm opposed to it, but I understand private property rights are such that we can't really tell somebody what they can and can't do. I think that their banker might have something to say about what they should and shouldn't do in the scenario where, if we're looking at allocations, restrictions, and you don't have sufficient acreage to cover that, then I don't, that's adding to the pot, it's adding to the total demand, and that's something that we're trying not to do.
Yeah.
And I think one of our stated goals from the onset, even in the alternative plan, was to reduce the volume and dependency on groundwater. Reducing the volume extracted is the only way we're going to come into even avoiding MTEs, or maybe even eventually getting somewhere closer to our MOs. It is by reduction or addition. It's a checkbook equation. We're doing some recharge efforts that hopefully will bear fruit. But in lieu of that, no pun intended, we're just kind of dependent on us to manage our own growth. You know, in agriculture, and I'm part of it, we've never been very good at doing that as an industry. We just go all in. And this is a time, I think, where we really need to examine on those dry land pieces whether we should really be continuing to develop those. But I don't have a mechanism to slow or stop that.
Okay. Land use restrictions.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I have them.
Yeah.
Oh, I know.
I agree with you wholeheartedly.
It's
the same subject.
It's as simple as it is.
I can't put a mobile home on my 40 acres.
All right.
Mobile home park. You know, there's restrictions that I have a neighbor who's got 400 or 500 acres of class one ground. He hasn't irrigated in 3 years. It's been irrigated for 75 years before that.
Right.
When he gets his tax bill, whatever we charge him, he's going to have to be slid.
I don't know. There's no consumption. There's no volumetric consumption.
Right, I want to pause to actually see if, Joe, if you had any clarifying questions, any initial reactions to what you've been hearing across the group.
Yeah, good luck with all that.
Yeah.
Totally kidding. I'm kidding. And, you know, I guess a few thoughts have been going through my mind. You know, first of all, a lot of the issues, or if not all of them, that you're grappling with, you know, they're not new. And I don't mean to be dismissive at all. I was going through my mind, and in no way am I going to bore you with all the war stories. But as you were identifying things like, you know, some land is fallowed now and it hasn't been irrigated, but now somebody wants to put it into production. What do you do about that? It was going through my mind. Oh yeah, I remember that conversation in Las Poses. What do we do with that? When you have, is it acreage-based allocation? Is it consumptive use allocation? You know, what kind of a scheme can you come up with? So it was interesting to me, because as you were all identifying these various issues, everybody handles them a little bit differently, but I was kind of going through that, you know, greatest hits in my mind of like, oh yeah, that's was that one. That was that one. In Kuyama, we've got, the, as I said before, the central management area. Well, there's another area that is adjacent that, you know, some will say it operates like a bath, one big bathtub. Others will say, no, it's not. It's connected, but it doesn't work that way. And so that other area can really, that we don't need a management area over there. But again, it's all how the hydrogeology and how the basin operates. Again, using my Kuyama example of got one management area, but there are folks who are adamant that there needs to be a second one because that second one drains into the first one. So what happens over there does affect this one, even though it's not as dramatic on a, you know, from a timing standpoint. Anyway, long way of saying, you know, everything, my initial reaction is that you all are identifying the issues. And again, this maybe not great consolation, but you're right where you ought to be, in grappling with some difficult issues. Good thing is I think as you noted before, you don't need to reinvent the wheel. You may do it differently, but so then Stephanie, it's not so much a clarifying question, is I'm just wondering if it would be helpful to the group. It wouldn't take a tremendous amount of my time. I could probably have my legal assistant pull together a bunch of this stuff. Here's, you know, on the issue of going from non-irrigated to irrigated, what have other, whether it's in a groundwater adjudication or a groundwater sustainability plan, how have people addressed that? You know, sometimes when you kind of have your arms around that, hey, here's about, you know, a dozen between adjudications and GSAs with GSPs, here's how they've handled that issue. We don't have to do it exactly how any of them have done it, but sometimes it's kind of helpful to kind of see it all in one place. And so as we identify maybe the first few issues that we're going to tackle, the question is, would it be helpful to kind of have something of, I don't know what the right word is, something of an inventory of here's what other people have done with that specific issue, and you can see it in one place.
I think, Joe, this is Adam. I think it'd be very helpful. I mean, Justin and his staff did a similar exercise when we were contemplating well mitigation programs. And for me, it was incredibly helpful to have that context. Not that we had to follow any one plan, but just having the context of what's been done in the past. That document you guys produced was fantastic.
Because it was really finite, too.
It was.
The one problem with the one we did here in the beginning is that it was infinite. Right? It was this huge document that says, here's all of the programs out there and all of the things that they're doing. And it's hard to get like good productive data out of that because it's so big. And I think you're right that if we can say, hey, this issue, here's the options. This issue, here's the options. And maybe like kind of push those out as we move forward, it might be helpful. So.
Yeah, because when you, that's great because, you know, when it's funny, when you get groundwater attorneys together who have been through a few adjudications, you know, it's a small group, relatively speaking, and we all get together to say, okay, now we're going to tackle, you know, whatever the issue is, whether it's, you know, the safe yield and the groundwater adjudication or allocations or whatever. Everybody starts pulling out their war stories. Oh, remember we over there, we did that, but remember there was a nuance to that, you know, and everybody who's new to the quote unquote club, they just roll their eyes, but that's what we talk about. Remember, we did that over there. We did that over there. We said we'd never do that again because of X, Y, and Z, you know, and that's literally what we do when we just, you know, lessons learned from the past and then you build on it. So I'm glad that you think that would be helpful.
Well, glad that as a hopefully a low level lift for you, Joe, and your team, for was it examples of how folks have addressed non-irrigated to irrigated conversion.
If that's the issue, again, using that as an example, and that may be it. But
describe each issue, we come in here with that first and say, hey, we're going to tackle these two issues next meeting. Here's the list.
Yeah, we bring us some context.
Yeah, and so where are we for next week? And not to jump too far ahead, but what are we, what's our homework assignment? What are we gonna,
we're going to get there. It's in here.
That's exactly what I'm looking for.
Hey, great segue.
Before we get there, Ken, Joe, you've kind of listened to all this and probably have a series of bullet items that you could do that same kind of a quick review on. So if pick out the ones that are highest priority or most interesting or however you want to do it, and maybe give us some feedback on several of those topics, not just well, land or whatever.
Yeah.
That type of thing. Based on the discussion that you've heard so far.
Yeah, you bet. I get it. I get it.
I have one more thing. One of the things, a lot of the issues we're talking about is it all centers under water reliability. And that's what growers need. And I'm just wondering, I haven't thought this through, Joe, but can we be looking maybe to either from you or staff or a paper that really addresses the issues of water reliability in the county and what we need to do from a regulatory standpoint to bring us to that point where growers now know what they're going to get and know what they have to work with. And so what I'm hoping to get out of this is something that says, well, land use restrictions are pretty key, you know, to make, you know, for water reliability in the county.
Yes.
And so I don't know, and this probably wasn't in your scope, but I'm just wondering, having something come out of this process from someone like yourself, politically, could mean something, could go somewhere. We did have a planning commission group that was working on the general plan, that was looking at zoning changes and whatever else that entailed. And from what I can tell, that process has stalled out. So if politically people have something to hang their hat on that leads to better reliability in the county, I'm wondering if that can come out of this process.
Yes, and it's funny, I made a note on that particular issue, addressing the allocations and the desire for certainty is what I wrote down in my note here, because one of the groundwater adjudications are expensive and very painful. One of the things that comes out of them is exactly that you get, you know, 2 acre feet per acre, 2.3 acre feet per acre, 3 acre feet per acre. You know, you get that allocation and now you've got something, right? And someone mentioned, you know, good luck lending on, you know, water when it's a decreasing supply. You don't know what you're going to get. Well, if you've got that allocation, then you've got something. You've got something. And so, yeah, I'm very, very well aware of, you know, what that reliability, certainty, however you want to describe it, the significance of that. You know, just it's a side issue, but, you know, as a friend of water lawyer, friend of mine always says, he's had only one title company give him title insurance on a water right because they just don't do it. But he got it in an adjudicated basin because there was a judgment. It said, this is what the landowner has in terms of their allocation. There's that much certainty to it. So from a political standpoint, nobody likes to tell people how much water they can pump. Believe me, I've been through the, you know, the torch and pitchfork meetings where it's standing room only. People don't like to hear that. But again, if you say, but at the end of this, you're going to get, you know, you're going to know what your allocation is and how much you can pump and why that fits into the overall sustainability plan. It's not just a, you know, a shot in the dark. So very long way of saying, I suppose. Yeah, I get it. And I think that provides, it's helpful to the landowners. It's helpful to the lenders. And I think it's helpful to the politicians too, as to here's a reason why this is good for you. Don't chop my head off for telling you there's going to be allocations coming. Hopefully that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm hearing from you, Joe, is that based off of your experience in so many of these other basins, that, you know, the various options and one of doing this management, one of the options is pursuing adjudication. And based off of your experience, you would be able to help this group kind of think through, okay, what are the factors that might warrant, like, how badly, how important is certainty and allocations? How important is that to the basins in Tehama County? And if it reaches a certain threshold, like, well, it sounds like this is, you know, a lot of basins decided to go through the adjudication route. So you would be able to kind of identify when that seems to be a viable option amongst the other options.
Yep.
Okay. One thing I want to do, kind of similar to what folks have asked about, if Joe can help us kind of identify what are some of the highest priority topics, and if he can do a low-level lift of pulling together, how have other basins done something similar to that? That was a nice, very nice segue to the six topics this group identified, these were pulled out from the appendix A. Oh, that's not it. So management area designation and the management zones, those boundary designation, how sustainable yield is determined, applied, calculated, reviewed, et cetera, all of that. Pumping allocations, the credit system, the demand management related funding costs, et cetera, and curtailment. All six of those were identified as top priority topics. And theoretically, if we were to take on those topics, the original idea was like, oh, let's just take two topics each meeting. That leads to a very cramped potential work plan and meeting schedule. We have, I think, four additional save the dates on your calendar for this group between now and through March. This seems like, I don't know about you, but this seems stressful. So I want just to open up to this group of, you know, do these still seem like discussion topics that we need to address within this March and April timeframe? If Joe, if you have any thoughts of which ones to, if we, what level of detail, like how in depth can we get into some of these discussions? What seems kind of just feasible from your perspective? And if there's anything that you guys want to absolutely prioritize, I just want to acknowledge that these were the priority topics, and these are some of the timing parameters that we're working with.
My initial thought is if Joe could provide us with some context on how other GSPs have solved the management zone question, the termination of the management zone, I think we could have a robust discussion on the 25th. And I wonder if the determination of sustainable yield could be included in that discussion. And does it make sense to focus our efforts on the 25th on only those two subjects? And Joe, knowing that you'll be unavailable, but I think you could provide those contextual documents ahead of time that might help steer our conversation.
Yeah.
And the question of, do we need to determine that methodology now? Or do we, I guess the question for me remains, do we need to have our zones determined when we submit this plan to DWR? Do we simply need to agree on how we're going to determine zones for the plan that we submit to DWR?
I mean, just from my perspective, you're not going to get them determined before we submit to DWR. To be honest with you, we should be talking about how we're doing it, right?
Yep.
As opposed to and having a plan that says how you're going to do it and maybe set some timelines.
Yep.
But I mean, there's some complicated data there we got to get together, I would assume.
I think it's all
not going to get there, like, within this. It's going to be in the plan that says how we do it and give us some time. We have a deadline. Cool. I think that's game. I think we're going to be shooting our own feet if we try to say we're going to do it today.
I agree.
So is Joe going to provide some, you know, a synopsis of how other areas have defined their management zones? You know, because like, based on land use, combination of AEM data. I saw another one. It was a sensitivity approach, which I don't know how practical that is, but it, from a technical standpoint, really makes a lot of sense. I just don't know that you could actually do it with the information that's available. In other words, we pump here, and when you're the sensitivity to a certain distance away is below a certain number, then everything within that is
yeah.
The same management. It'd be helpful to know the approach that other areas have used and whether it's actually been implemented or not.
Yeah, that's spot on. I'm thinking back, Michael, to the meeting we had at the library there where EWR shared some of that.
Yeah.
Data on infiltration data and a lot of that that's available. I'm sure that Joe has experience with methodologies that have worked well in the past and other GSAs that are worth our consideration.
Just so you know, there is AEM data and subwatership boundaries.
I thought that was very interesting. And I'm sure there's been other GSAs that have used it. And to me, that just struck the common sense bell was ringing when I was listening to him present some of that data.
Be really interesting to overlay some of that data with, for example, current land use, land IQ data. When I think about it, I think about flying out west and you fly over those watersheds and you see where the trees are planted. Right. Are we really worried about getting way up on the top of the hills right now? Or are we worried about what's going on in the watershed areas where the alluvial is, where the water and soil actually is that people are farming? And if we overlay several of these plates, maybe we get some better indication of where those sub-management zones should be. You know, maybe we don't need to get way out into the hills. Maybe we need to stay where it's actually being farmed.
Yeah. And my hope is, Joe, that you've seen the good, bad, and the ugly in other GSAs and what's worked and what hasn't, which would provide some context there.
Yes. And I'm wondering, this is slightly off topic, but Stephanie, you in particular, as I'm looking at the meeting schedule here, and I thought I heard a comment a while ago about the board and wanting to show progress and that there would be some anticipated relief on the scheduling of things, because I'm looking at the potential meeting schedule and, you know, every week just about through April to tackle some really heady issues may be overly ambitious. And so I'm wondering, and just, I'm just throwing it out on the table for a discussion, you know, for the meeting next week that I can't attend, if maybe that time is used to lay out what the timeline is going to be and come up with the overall work plan ending in, you know, the date certain when we're going to, right now you have it as April 14th and then April 26th as the proposal presentation and potential adoption. I think that this may be overly ambitious to put all this stuff together, you know, really a little over a month from now. So I'm just wondering if next week is the, when I can't be there, to lay out, here's what we want the timeline to be to address these various issues leading into, and I don't know when what the actual end date would be, but maybe that's what gets presented on March 26th to the board of directors of, here's what we've come up with and we got a plan and this is going to be it. And I know I'm coming into this cold, so that may be silly at this juncture, but that's what occurs to me when I'm looking at this schedule.
I sit for that idea.
You know, I had a question for you. Joe, you had a hand in the, what we're calling the alternative plan. You're familiar with it. And you're also familiar with, or you will be soon, our comments and concerns and proposed amendments to it. Is it too much to ask between now and next week that you give us another? Can you incorporate the concerns and at least address them line by line, amended plan? That way, at least by the 26th, we've got something to show the board that here's the document that we're working on. Mm-hmm. We're hammering away on this now. I think we've got a damn good start on that alternative plan. And I'm not throwing anything that you did under the bus, Justin. This is just a fact. I think there's more of us that are on board with the majority of that plan than are disappointed with it. I think we've got a pretty good start. So can you use the basis, that basis to get back to us with another draft by next week?
Yeah, I can do that.
Okay. That'll give us something to discuss. The minutiae of getting into the management zones and the sustainable yield determination has been already stated. We're not gonna figure all that out in the next 30 days. We haven't figured it out in 4 years. I don't know how we're going to do it in 30 days.
But we are
tasked with delivering something to the board. And without painting ourselves into a corner, I think we need to give ourselves some room to work. But, you know, getting something on paper would be a hell of a start, I think. And I really enjoyed the fact that you've been here today, Joe. I think you're going to start bringing some clarity to what we're doing. And I think we just need to keep moving forward with the deliverable at this point.
Great, so, thank you.
I agree with all that. So is synthesizing on the 25th. Our meeting scheduled for the 25th, and we'll review the revised document from Joe with the hope that we present it to the board on the
20th. And ideally, we get it before then so we don't look at it here for the first time.
Correct. And we also revise our schedule and work plan with the hope that we present both the revised work plan and the revised document to the board on the 26th.
I don't know that it's presented to the board.
Well,
because it's got to go through the commission.
Sure. I'm sorry.
Here's where we are. Here's the update. Here's what we did this. Then it goes to the commission in April and to the board in April.
I misread. I thought I read in when that line says board of directors, I thought we were talking to the commission.
Yeah, no, that's board.
But I absolutely, in terms of protocol, I think it's here to the commission and the commission to the board.
Yeah. But we can say hand on heart and we have a revised document.
Yeah.
And we have a revised work plan, and we are making progress.
And if you'd like to see it, here it is. Yeah. But this is under, we're working on it. This is where we're at.
Yeah, you can do a kind of.
I guarantee you that's what they actually want to hear.
Absolutely.
You can use the March 26th as kind of a temperature check with the board to see how receptive they are to the progress and see if that they would be open to granting some more flexibility and extension in April, so that way some of us can actually sleep in the next couple of months. So, Joe, does that sound like if you're able to work on providing a revised alternative plan that incorporates some of the edits that you've that people have actually redlined, as well as if you're able to kind of pull some of the things that you've heard today, if possible, but I think prioritizing what you already have submitted, and that. I know you're pretty much gone all of next week, so it would be you're very a bit faster to turn around. This group will have a discussion next week that would review that alternative plan and then relook at and have outline more of that updating the work plan with some ideally some timelines and some. Milestones, that way you can be able to give a quick update, like update to the board that week, and then pass it through the commission.
Yeah, with a caveat that not just the edits to the document, but comments that were made. Because, like I said, email comments.
Yeah, he has it all. Yes.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying.
Yeah, understood.
Not just the red lines, but also the comments.
And what I may do, and that's excellent point. And what I may do is I may, have put my own margin comments. I'm like, here is the comment. Here's a couple ways of addressing it, right? I mean, just team the stuff up. So, okay, here was the comment. Here's some language, but there's a couple ways to address it or not, whatever. But I'm thinking out loud now. Sorry.
Comment was a comment. Basically, a resolution spreadsheet kind of thing.
Yeah.
Here's the comment. Here's the addressing.
Yeah. Exactly.
There's somewhere.
Not
in my head.
Yeah. We'll think about it. Like.
All right.
So I think everything was great, man.
Okay. So we have time. So we didn't get to voluntary based actions, but I think that was fine. That we wanted to make sure though that we spent. The time needed for Joe to hear your perspectives and thinking through what you want to see with the revised proposal. So again, the next working group meeting is next week at 9 a.m. Joe won't be able to attend, but he's going to try to get us a revised alternative plan based off of the red lines and comments. Anything else, Justin?
No, I think it was a good meeting.
All right. Yeah,
next week will be at Jackson Street.
Yeah, the community center.
Okay. Thank you so much, Joe. It's great to have you on board, and we're excited to work with you.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here, and nice to meet everybody over the Zoom.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, see ya. Bye.
Thanks, everyone, for calling in.